Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hey there, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet, one person at a time. Today we have with us Dr. Mark Thurston, who's going to speak with us about the power of really knowing your life purpose. It drives people crazy when they don't know what they're for. And this is probably the number one topic that I get with my own clients who come, you know, they're coming to me for psychic readings, and it just makes them mental not to, everyone feels like they're for something, but they don't know what it is, and that's hard. And Mark has a very interesting inspiration for his work on this topic. He's an expert on the work of Edgar Cayce, who actually had a lot to say even way back in the 1930s and 40s about the power of knowing your life purpose, kind of as a spiritual path. And I have to admit that I have a soft spot for Edgar Cayce myself. I'm kind of a big fan. It was when I was growing up as a psychic child in the 1970s, right outside of Boston, which is where I grew up, I used to go to the public library and look up books on psychic stuff. And I was trying so hard to understand myself and what I was experiencing back then. And there wasn't very many books in the library. Actually, my library had three books on the topic. There was a book by Jane Roberts in the Seth Speaks material. There was one by Uri Geller about spoon bending, which was absolutely useless. And then there was a whole bunch of Edgar Cayce books. And I just read them all cover to cover. And even though I was young, and I think a lot of his material kind of went over my head, I felt very, so respectful of him, and really see Edgar Cayce as not just some guy who kind of had these crazy predictions, but sort of a real founding father of modern spirituality. And so I got excited about how Mark brought these two topics together in such an interesting way. And I'm so excited to talk about this, Mark. So welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Lisa.
And what can you tell us? Because most people don't really know too much about Edgar Cayce. He's a little kind of old school, but I think he's great.
Yeah. As you said, he really was a pivotal figure in modern spirituality. He was born in 1877, and he did his clairvoyant work and put forward his spiritual philosophy in the first 45 years of the 20th century. He died in 1945. And for those that want to sort of explore more about his last name is spelled Cayce. So it's a little bit unusual spelling of Cayce. And for the first 20 years or so of his clairvoyant gift, he focused on health and healing. And he was able to go into a prayer-induced altered state of consciousness, much like hypnosis. And he seemed to be able to tap into a wisdom about most any topic that was posed to him, initially almost always about people's physical conditions that had defied help from traditional medicine. And the recommendations that he gave were always a kind of natural, holistic approach to health and healing. And so in this sense, he was really one of the pioneers or father figures of the modern holistic health movement. But the last 20 years of his life, he began to branch out and answer questions about a lot of other topics. And there are about 2,000 readings, all of which were stenographically recorded and then typed up. So we have the archival records. But about 2,000 people over those 20 years asked him to give some guidance about their life purpose. What was the meaning of their life? What was their gift? What was their calling? And it's those readings that I drew upon and writing what's actually a second edition of this book, Discovering Your Soul's Purpose.
And he often talked about people's past lives in those particular life readings, right?
Yeah. I don't think a person necessarily has to believe in reincarnation to work with the strategies and principles for finding one's calling that's contained in his readings. But the fact of the matter is, as he would clairvoyantly look into a person's psyche, his way of describing many of their gifts and talents, as well as their shortcomings and their obstacles, was framed in terms of a reincarnational perspective. We've been here before, we've got ourselves into trouble before, We've also cultivated aptitudes and talents that we bring with us, and that the mission or the calling that we're born with kind of grows out of a configuration of these experiences we've had over the centuries as human beings. This notion of reincarnation was always human to human.
So that's where the soul work comes into it, right? That it's really an expression of your soul.
Right. And I think the word soul is really a powerful word. I think sometimes when people hear the word soul, they think that always just means sort of a transcendental part of us that sort of would survive physical death. And that's one context for what Casey means about soul. But if we think about how the word soul is used, it also means something that's filled with values and meaning. If we say, you and I had a soulful conversation, it's really talking about we were really dealing with authentic kind of gutsy issues. We were really getting down to what's meaningful and value-laden for both of us. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, soul isn't just transcendent. It's also very eminent. It's very present in our relationships, in our jobs, in our physical bodies.
And how did you become involved with Edgar Casey's work?
Oh, I was a high school senior, and I was very interested in math and science. I was sure I wanted to be a physicist, but I was also very involved with my liberal Protestant Christian church, and I didn't know what to do with these two sides of myself. It didn't really seem to have much conversation with each other. And I came home from school one afternoon, and I was watching the Mike Douglas talk show. I guess in the late 60s was kind of like Oprah Winfrey or something like that today. And the author of The Sleeping Prophet, a biography about Edgar Casey, a man named Jeff Stern, was on the Mike Douglas show with Edgar Casey's son, Hugh Lynn Casey. And I was enthralled by the conversation about this guy. I'd never heard of him. And I immediately went out and bought a copy of that book. And as you were mentioning, there were other books that had already been published about him, and I got those two. And it really got me thinking about the direction my life was headed in. So I ended up deciding eventually in college on psychology as a career. And it's been a very fruitful path for me. I had a chance to work for 36 years at the Edgar Casey Center in Virginia Beach. Mm-hmm. I'm now faculty member at a big public university in the northern part of Virginia, George Mason University. And I'm teaching students about the same age I was when I first got involved in these topics. And I'm getting to do academic courses with them about mindfulness and life purpose.
Wow, that's fabulous. I'm so glad they're teaching that stuff in the university. It's wonderful.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds sort of like you came to him sort of a little bit the same way I did, which is to kind of, you know, feeling like I was searching for something that I couldn't put my fingers on in there, and that he was one of the few people back then talking about that stuff.
Yeah. And I think, Lisa, that most of the people that came to him asking for help, a lot of them had physical health problems, but others weren't physically sick, but there was sort of a restlessness or a woundedness in their psyche or in their soul. And they were feeling lost or confused or stuck or aimless. And because they felt something wasn't working for them, they were really open to get a new kind of vision about their life. Edgar Casey was sort of helping them to have a vision quest of sorts.
And you kind of have come up with a strategy based on his work to help people do the same thing now. Can you tell us a little bit about
right.
that?
Yeah. So this is my elevator speech. If you can imagine, we're on a
tall
building. It takes me 2 or 3 minutes to do my elevator speech. But I read almost all, I think, of the 2,000 so-called life readings that he gave to people about finding their soul purpose. And even though those readings were given in a very specialized, you know, idiosyncratic way for a particular person, what I began to recognize was that there was a certain template or a certain pattern he seemed to be following as he counseled people about how they could find their calling, and had 5 steps to it. And the book sort of follows this outline and has exercises the reader can do to sort of give themselves a reading in a way. So The first step is to clarify core values and to come up with a statement of one's spiritual ideal. And, you know, we could do a whole show just on that topic, but it's sort of the foundational point. It's the starting point to be clear about what you believe in, what your core values are. The second part of a life reading, Casey would use his clairvoyance to sort of see deeply into the psyche or the soul of the individual and describe key talents, aptitudes, skills, and strengths. And he would often hone in on 4 or 5 that were particularly important. Sometimes, as you mentioned, he would use the language of reincarnation to talk about how a certain talent or skill had been developed in the distant past. Sometimes he would use astrological language, not so much sun signs, but planetary influences, to talk about their temperament and how that had within it certain strengths and gifts. So each person was given, you know, 6 or slightly less. And then a third step was he'd show them how those things could work together, how they could constellate and play off each other and build on each other to create a calling, a type of service in the world for the greater good. His notion was that everybody was born with something they're meant to do that serves the greater good. And you don't have to be famous in this. It can be done in a very modest way that just reaches a few people. For some people, it has much more notoriety and reaches millions of people. But it always involves some kind of a service using core talents and gifts and strengths. And so I try to coach people in the book through how they would write a first draft mission statement after they've done this sort of self-inquiry of finding their core values, clarifying their most essential gifts and talents. The fourth part of a live reading was to tell people how they might go about an application strategy. It's not enough just to know your mission in life. You got to do something with it. And so I kind of coach people through writing a 90-day plan or a 1-year plan for baby steps they could take in living the purpose. And I think it's important to recognize that sometimes our sole purpose is occupational, but other times it's the free time activities we have. It's the way we are with our family, the way we are in our community, our volunteer work, not just the way we earn our money.
Right. And the often it's not how we earn our money.
Right. Yeah. It's just our way of being in life.
Right.
And the last step is to watch for certain reinforcing signs that tell us we're on track. So, for example, he said, a person who's living their life purpose will have more joy than they used to have. Mm-hmm. Or the person who's living their life purpose will experience more often a kind of flow to life, or synchronistic signs that show us we're on track or point the way to the next step. So I know that's kind of an abbreviated version of the strategy in the book, but that's what I'm calling an Edgar Casey pathway for finding and then living one's calling.
It sounds great. I mean, I really resonated with everything that you were saying, and I liked that it's a very practical approach. Do you find that a lot of people are really off the mark, or are people already more or less living their life purpose?
Boy, it's kind of all over the map, I think. When I wrote the first edition of this book, it was published in 1984, and I had just started doing workshops for Edgar Casey's organization where I was working, the Association for Research and Enlightenment, on this topic, and I was traveled to a couple of different dozen cities, and so I probably worked with 1,000 people in workshops and in one-on-one counseling before I wrote the first edition. And then since then, I've worked with thousands and thousands of more, and I think almost everybody has a sense of their core values. If they'll look at their own peak experiences in life, if they'll kind of remember moments of inspiration, that sometimes we get lost and forget in the busyness of life. I think almost everybody has some sense of their gifts and talents. A lot of times we have inner talk that diminishes ourselves and kind of puts ourselves down and compares ourselves to somebody else, and we kind of talk ourselves out of some of these things that really are our gifts. But I think we all have an intuitive sense of what some of our core talents are. I think for a lot of people, it's more of a stretch to try to shape a mission statement. Sometimes they've worked in a business setting where their work group or their company has written a mission statement for the business or for the organization.
Yep.
So they kind of have a sense of how this can be done in a collective way of the organization's mission statement. And it never occurred to them that they could do this for themselves as well. So that's often something that takes a little more patience, a little bit of guidance in terms of practical exercises to get to that point.
But it's so powerful when you have it. And I think that it's a really, like for me, that's been a really guiding principle. You know, when I got really clear on what mine was, I feel that and see it as a backbone for everything that I do. And it also helps me inform, make decisions about what I'm doing to see whether, if I have a choice, is it supporting that core mission yeah. statement, you know, and is an alignment in it. And, you know, I feel what I noticed too about it is that people who really live in their life purpose have this, like he said, kind of joy or more energy. It's not like I don't work hard because I do, but I find my work very enlivening. Like it, yeah. when I'm doing something that's in alignment with that statement, I kind of get life force energy out of it, even
well,
though it's still work.
Because that's one of the seven signposts. And Casey suggests that when we're living our calling, we kind of tap into an energy that's bigger than ourselves.
Yeah,
and it doesn't mean that there aren't days where we feel fatigued or spent.
Yeah,
we got to be realistic. There's ups and downs just being in a physical body in the material world.
But, yeah, work is still work.
Yeah, and we can get a sense of that sometimes we're drawing on an energy that seems bigger than ourselves.
Yeah, and I think it's like that. You know what? Almost like the farther away we get from our life purpose, we get very drained or very sort of lifeless, you know, and the closer we get to it, we get sort of fed by that, by those activities, even though it's still work. That's how I feel.
There's probably cycles to this as well. I guess the question I'm asked probably most often is, do I have just one purpose or can my purpose change? And I guess it could. You could probably complete a purpose and kind of graduate from that and be ready for a next one. I think more often, though, our life purpose is thematic. I'll give you an example of that in just a minute. And at different points in our lifespan, that theme gets expressed in different ways. And so we move from one job to another job, but the same purposeful theme is animating both those phases.
Right. So it might be like an evolution, more like an evolution and sort of really changing tracks.
Yeah. What kind of soul growth or the mission itself sort of evolving. He very rarely, if ever, told somebody that their mission in life was a particular occupation. Like he wouldn't say, your mission in life is to be a butcher or a baker or a candlestick maker. It was more thematic, as I was saying earlier. So one woman was told in her reading from Edgar Casey that her mission in life was to help people through the difficult transitions of life. And we think about that a little bit. I think we'd recognize there's probably lots of ways in which she might have been able to do that in an occupational way, but there may have been ways that she could do that just in her family or in her neighborhood and her community, or the way she stood in support of herself, helping herself through the difficult change points and transitions in life. And so I think we all want something that's specific and really challenges us, but has some freedom to it and some flexibility and some room for us to grow. None of us want to be pinned down to the same old thing for 50 or 60 years.
Yeah, I find that's often the way that I experience that for myself is sort of like archetypes. I love archetypes. And so like I feel like I have the archetype of healer, which is, you know, what I've been doing mm-hmm. for my whole mm-hmm. life. And I could, like, I did that as a mother, I did it, you know, as a therapist, I do it as a psychic, but you could take me out of my office and put me in McDonald's flipping hamburgers and I'm still going to do it.
Exactly.
I can't
right.
help it. I can't help putting my hands on people and giving them Reiki and talking to their dead grandmothers because it's not what I do, it's who I am at a bigger level. Yeah. So cool. Can we talk, it's slightly off topic here, but I'm so fascinated about this guy, can we talk a little bit about the psychic side of him, since I'm a psychic and I'm so fascinated. I mean, he's such one of the world's best psychics ever.
You know, in so
great.
Many ways, he's sort of an archetype of what a seer could be. One of my favorite biographies of Edgar Cayce was written by Harmon Breaux, who was a minister and a psychotherapist who actually knew Edgar Cayce and was present for 500 of the readings.
Wow.
And his biography of Cayce is entitled A Seer Out of Season, sort of almost as if Cayce was born before his time.
Fascinating.
This notion of seeing deeply, seeing clearly. And I think what's sometimes not recognized about Cayce is that he was clairvoyant in the waking state, as well as the trance state, that he was consciously clairvoyant. And
I didn't know that about him. I thought he was like a trance channel and just was lights out and didn't remember.
Yeah. Well, he did a lot of his work in that kind of unconscious state. He said that he was not a channel in the sense of some other being speaking through him. We could say he was channeling his own higher self. But he was also in the waking state, telepathic, clairvoyant. And so he's encouraging us to find ways in which in daily life, in our mothering, in our fathering, in our working at our company, we can trust our gut instincts and our intuitions. Most of us are not going to go into trance and give readings, but I think all of us can be open to how the intuitive mind is always kind of there, ready to supplement the logical, rational mind.
Right. So he had some guidance for the general people about how to open more to their intuition on a daily basis.
He was a big advocate of meditation, for example, as a training tool for tapping into our intuition. Tapping into our soul. He continually emphasized the importance of clarifying and recommitting to core values and ideals. He was very big on dreams and the way in which dreams could be a portal to the higher self. He really wanted us to be very careful about practicing discernment, because everything that comes out of the unconscious mind is not always from the same quality or reliability of information. There's really a lot of very important material about the development of our intuition in a healthy way that, you know, promotes soul growth rather than leading us astray.
And do you think he was just like, kind of like, this sounds a kind of extreme, but like a spiritual master who was just really ahead of his time?
Well, I think he was, first of all, somebody who was living his soul's purpose.
Hmm.
I think he was also somebody who was demonstrating for us in very ordinary circumstances, we can still do extraordinary things. I mean, Virginia Beach was kind of an out-of-the-way little resort city. It was really off the beaten track. And here was a man who taught Sunday school all through his life, was very humble, really wasn't known until about 1942 when some publicity came out about him. And so in very humble circumstances, he was really able to do something that over the decades after his death has been transformational.
Yeah, it's amazing how his work is continuing to impact people, especially through agents like yourself who are writing about him and sort of updating him to us modern people now. And so if on that note, how do people get your book? How do people get in touch with you?
Well, I want to encourage people, first of all, just to study this guy a little bit. They can go to edgarcayce.org, which is the organization, ARE, that I worked for many years. Mm-hmm. They can also, on the web, go to my webpage. It's just Mark Thurston, markthurston.com. And on my webpage there, they can leave me a message if they like. They could be on my mailing list. There's a link that takes them right over to Amazon where they can order the book that came out 2 weeks ago, and I'd be glad to hear from them.
That's awesome. Yeah, and you know, we'll put up a link too on our page so they can you know, they can find all those, your book and your website, and also more information about Edgar Cayce. He's such a fascinating person, even today. And I just really enjoyed your book. I'm really, you know, like I said, I've always been kind of a Cayce fan, and I so appreciated how you brought him into relevance and to the present day. So thank you for writing that book.
I always love talking to somebody who's living their life's purpose. It sounds like you're really living your calling.
Yeah, I think I am. And it is a beautiful thing. So Thank you. And thank you so much for being on my show tonight.
I've enjoyed it.
Talking about healing and it's fascinating stuff. Thank you so much, Mark.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
And thank you, all of you guys out there in Empower Radio Land, for listening to us. If you want to reach me, you can catch me at lisacampion.com. Drop by and give me a ring. Talk to y'all later.